This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Patrick Clancy found his three children dead in the basement of his home in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Exercise bands around each of their necks. His wife broken on the frozen ground outside a second story window. His screaming 911 call, the prosecution wants a jury to hear every single second of it. And Patrick Clancy is testifying for the defense of his wife. The man who lost Cora, 5 years old, Dawson, three, Callan, 8 months. The man whose voice cracked on a 911 recording as he discovered what happened to his family in his own basement. That man is walking into a courtroom to stand beside the woman who killed them. He's not standing beside her because he's confused. He's not standing beside her because he's in denial. He's standing beside her because he watched the system that was supposed to help his wife fail at every single turn. He filed a wrongful death lawsuit against her healthcare providers. He started a GoFundMe that raised over $1 million, and he forgave her publicly because Patrick Clancy believes the people who should be answering for his children's death are not in that courtroom. They're still practicing medicine. They're still sitting in ivory towers, pumping out pills and making decisions that don't face consequences. Lindsay Clancy goes to trial this week on charges of first-degree murder, and we're going to be covering it for you right here. If you want to hear the audio of the case, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and you will get access to all of the court audio. 3 counts, one for each child. She's not claiming innocence. She has conceded through her attorney that she did it, that she killed Cora, Dawson, and Callan. On January 24th of 2023, she is pleading not guilty by reason of insanity. She's asking to spend the rest of her life in a psychiatric facility receiving treatment, not in a prison. And that distinction matters because everything about this case comes down to one question. Was Lindsay Clancy a woman who planned the murders of her children in a clear state of mind, a monster that wanted nothing more than to steal the souls of her child and take them to the other side? Or was she a woman whose brain was shattered by untreated postpartum psychosis and a carousel of medications that nobody was coordinating? And who heard a voice she could not resist. If you're following this case with any sort of clarity, you will very quickly see the latter is far more likely the case. And if you don't believe me, that's fine. I'd love to hear your opinion in the comments section on Substack and YouTube, whether you agree, whether you disagree. Everyone is certainly entitled to an opinion. But I will preface it with this. If you've never found yourself in a situation with postpartum depression yourself, having a partner that has postpartum depression or postpartum psychosis, or a close person in your life where you have seen this firsthand, not just through a YouTube video or somebody talking about it on a TikTok or a friend of a friend, or what should happen because somebody told you that and that's what you... If you've never had firsthand experience in this arena, I don't know that you really have a voice that matters. It's just like anything. If you've never been a fighter pilot, your opinions on how to fly the plane and shoot the enemies down probably doesn't make a goddamn bit of difference. just like this. If you've never been close enough to this condition, and you have a real strong opinion about how she was wrong the other way, then you probably don't know what you're talking about. I mean, that's kind of a fact. You don't know what you're talking about because you don't have facts. You don't have experience in that area. I mean, if you've studied it, if you've learned about it and then taken that information in, okay. But to actually live it, that's a whole other experience. I know there's thousands of you out there watching or listening right now who know exactly what I am talking about. And you've probably had to keep your mouth shut a couple times around a Karen or somebody who wants to shoot their mouth off and have their voice heard for the sake of their voice going into the ether. While you quietly let me hold back and not attempt to strangle you across the table for your ignorant stance and understanding of such a situation. So let me help you understand it if you do not. And if you do not and you're willing to hear and understand, well, good on you. The world needs more folks who can say, I don't know anything about this, so I'm not going to have much of an opinion until I fully grasp it. Not just, killed your kids, must be evil. That's not always how it works, especially when you get a cocktail of medications not being coordinated by the people you trust. Brain-altering medications. But I digress. 15 women contacted her defense team. 15 strangers with no connection to this case. They said they had personally experienced postpartum psychosis, command hallucinations, suicidal ideations, and thoughts of hurting the people they love, including the kids. They wanted to tell a jury that what Lindsay Clancy described is real. Whether the court will let them speak is a question that tells you about how this system treats mothers. The dog's upset about that too. Lindsay Clancy was a labor and delivery nurse at Massachusetts General Hospital. She spent her career helping mothers through the most vulnerable moments of their lives. She understood maternal health at a clinical level. She wasn't someone who distrusted doctors or avoided treatment. When something went wrong after the birth of her third child, she ran towards the system. She sought help from psychiatrists, emergency rooms, crisis hotlines, and hospitals. She admitted herself for inpatient care 3 separate times. She told her providers, her husband, and her mother that she was having thoughts of harming the little ones. And the system kept her moving along. Postpartum psychosis is not postpartum depression. They are not on a spectrum. They are not a mild version and a severe version of the same thing. Postpartum psychosis is a psychiatric emergency. It affects roughly 1 in 1,000 women. The brain's perception of reality fractures. Hallucinations, delusions, command voices telling the mother to do things she would never do in a rational state. Untreated postpartum psychosis carries a 4% rate of infanticide, meaning taking the lives of the very children that you care for, that you love, that are yours. According to a systematic review published in the Archives of Women's Mental Health, it is rare, but it is catastrophic, and it is treatable. If someone catches it and treats it correctly, nobody caught it. After Callan was born in May of 2022, Lindsay's behavior shifted. She woke at 4 in the morning to run 3 miles, followed by aerobics and spinning. She ran a 5-mile race 5 weeks after giving birth. She impulsively bought into a multi-level marketing program. Then, about 3 months later, the crash. Anxiety, depression, insomnia, 3 hours a night. She sought psychiatric care in September of 2022 and was prescribed Zoloft. According to her malpractice lawsuit, the Zoloft made her worse. She didn't sleep for 48 hours, racing thoughts, worsening anxiety, paranoia. The lawsuit claims this antidepressant activation, a reaction documented in psychiatric literature as a textbook red flag for bipolar disorder. Nobody flagged it. They prescribed another medication, then another, and another. At least 10 different medications over 4 months. According to court filings, antidepressants, benzodiazepines, a sedative, an antipsychotic, her own lawsuit calls it a disorganized, uncoordinated course of polypharmacy. No single provider had a complete picture of what Lindsay was taking. No one paused to question whether stacking medications on a patient whose condition was getting worse with every new prescription was the right approach. In November of 2022, one provider, nurse practitioner Rebecca Gioletta, actually considered bipolar disorder as a possibility and prescribed Seroquel, an antipsychotic and mood stabilizer. According to the lawsuit, that's when things got dramatically worse. Suicidal thoughts, auditory hallucinations, and Lindsay initially mistook for intrusive thoughts those feelings. She told her husband she was having thoughts of harming the children. She called a hotline, and according to the lawsuit, she was told she didn't qualify for inpatient treatment because she didn't have a detailed plan to actually end it. You got to be right at the very end before anybody's going to do anything. Her husband begged a nurse to take Lindsay off all the medications and start over. Instead, they increased her dosages. And just before Christmas of 2022, Lindsay admitted herself to a day program at Women and Infants Hospital in Providence. She told workers she was crazy depressed, numb to all emotion, can't feel love. Testing confirmed she scored in the most severe categories for anxiety and depression. The doctor at Women's and Infants ruled out bipolar disorder, determined Lindsay did not have postpartum depression. The malpractice lawsuits allege this happened because the doctor failed to take an adequate medical history from the Clancys. Lindsay was rejected from the treatment program and sent home. How nice. A diagnosis, the one that allegedly missed the correct condition entirely, is about to become the prosecution's primary evidence at Lindsay Clancy in her trial that she was sane. Yeah. That diagnosis that missed the correct condition entirely is the prosecution's theory on the case. After Women and Infants turned her away, Lindsay's thoughts worsened. She went to McLean Hospital, a psychiatric institution, and spent 5 days in a locked unit. And according to the lawsuit, she didn't see a doctor until 3 days in. Her follow-up after discharge was a 10-minute phone call with a psychiatrist who prescribed yet another medication, then a 17-minute appointment. Within a week, the hallucinations were back, another prescription, and then another. On January 23rd of 23, one day before, Lindsay had a 17-minute appointment with her psychiatrist. The doctor increased her antidepressant dosage. And on January 24th, according to her lawsuit, Lindsay began hearing a compelling and unrecognizable singular male voice. The voice told her it was her last chance, that she had to take her children with her, that the children would suffer if she survived without them. And according to the complaint, Lindsay said she lost all control, that her body started acting without any control on her part, and she was following commands. According to the lawsuit, she told her children, "Go to God, baby." Then she strangled each of them with exercise bands in the basement. She overdosed on her medications, cut her wrists and neck, and jumped from the second-story window. She survived. She's paralyzed below the sternum. She'll be in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. Patrick had been gone approximately 25 minutes to pick up takeout. He called 911 when he found Lindsay on the ground outside. And during the call, he discovered the children in the basement. The recording captured his screams. The prosecution says Lindsay checked a map to see how long Patrick would be away, and that she did it to calculate how much time she would have. Lindsay says she checked because she was terrified to be alone. That question, premeditation or desperation, may be the most contested fact at trial. And here's the thing. If you're in that kind of a mental state, does it really matter? Yeah, you may be premeditating things. You also may be premeditating and be fearful of a monster coming through the wall too. It doesn't mean the basis for the premeditation is based on reality. Plymouth County District Attorney Timothy Cruz charged Lindsay Clancy with 3 counts of first-degree murder. His theory, she was lucid, she planned it, she interacted normally with people on the day of the killing, she played with the children, she sent Patrick out, she knew what she was doing. Again, probably someone who's never dealt with anyone in this sort of state. And his key evidence for her mental state, the Women and Infants Hospital assessment, the one that said she didn't have postpartum depression, the one that ruled out bipolar disorder, the same diagnosis that 2 civil lawsuits and a forensic psychiatric evaluation allege was negligently wrong. The system failed to correctly diagnose Lindsay Clancy when she was sitting in front of them begging for help, and the prosecution is using that failure as proof that she was sane. A post-incident forensic evaluation by Dr. Margaret Spinelli, a Columbia University psychiatric professor, diagnosed Lindsay with bipolar disorder 1, severe, with psychosis and anxious distress with postpartum onset. The defense's expert witness say her violent behavior was precipitated by manic psychosis, including compelling command hallucinations. Members of her current treatment team have identified what they call extreme failures in her pre-incident care, including misdiagnosis and overprescription. The diagnosis Lindsay never received while she begged for help, she received after her children were dead. Jury selection begins this week in Plymouth Superior Court. The trial is expected to last 4 to 8 weeks. The witness list includes 168 names. Under Massachusetts law, in an infant defense case, or insanity, rather, defense case, the prosecution bears the burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was criminally responsible. The defense does not have to prove she was insane. The state has to prove she was sane. The defense tried to call the 15 women who had personally experienced postpartum psychosis and command hallucinations, women who had all heard voices telling them to harm their children, women who locked themselves in rooms, who drove away from their own homes, who fought against impulses they didn't understand. Attorney Kevin Reddington told the judge that these women should be able to testify credibly. His words, "I too have heard these command voices. I too acted on the command voices." The judge blocked them. Can't have people who've actually been through this in that courtroom. Oh, no, don't want to do that. Expert witnesses can educate a jury about the medical condition, the court ruled. The women who actually lived through it? No. That's a little too close to the sun for the court. For them to go, maybe we're wrong on this. Maybe we really drove ourselves into a brick wall and now we're about to hit it. Reddington filed a motion noting that these women had been, again, in his words, victimized by the medical system that fails to recognize the severe, debilitating, and devastating impact of postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis. Judge said, no, can't hear them, don't want to hear them. Lindsay Clancy is not asking the jury to set her free. She's not asking them to say she didn't kill Cora Dawson and Callan. She's asking them to determine that she was suffering from a mental illness so severe that she lacked the capacity to conform her conduct to the law. She's asking for treatment in a psychiatric institution, the treatment she needed before January 24th of 23, the treatment nobody gave her. And if the judge has his way, by not letting these women in, if the prosecution has their way, by pretending this stuff doesn't exist, well, then we're just going to keep getting more Lindsay Clancy's. Because if we pretend these things don't exist, we don't address them, and we don't treat them as real, because it's icky and it makes us feel bad, it didn't happen to me, I gave birth, didn't happen to my sister, didn't happen to this, didn't happen to this, then we're not helping anyone. We're just sitting here telling ourselves the same narrative over and over that if it didn't happen to you, well, it mustn't happen to anybody. The most ignorant line of thinking that sinks more ships than anything else. Patrick Clancy lost his daughter, lost both his sons. He discovered their bodies. He will hear his own 911 call played in open court, and he is testifying for the defense. He told the New Yorker, "I wasn't married to a monster. I was married to someone who got sick." He watched his wife beg the medical system for help through ER visits, crisis calls, hospitalizations, and a parade of medications that made everything worse, and he saw every provider nod, prescribe, and move on. The way our system does. Ask your doctor if not giving a shit is right for you. Both civil lawsuits point at the same failures. Rushed appointments, 10 minutes, 17 minutes, as we know they all are. Ask your doctor if 10 minutes of evaluation for a psychiatric condition is right for you. Because I can guarantee about 90-some percent of them will go, yeah. The med rep is in today? They're bringing us tacos? It's Taco Tuesday with Trintellix? Medication stacked without coordination. A suicide hotline that told a woman of suicidal ideation she didn't qualify to get help. A husband who begged providers to stop and start over and was ignored. A hospital that allegedly ruled out the correct diagnosis and sent her home. Cora was 5, Dawson was 3, Callan 8 months old. According to the civil lawsuits, a Suffolk law review analysis, and a forensic psychiatric evaluation, their deaths were preventable with adequate medical intervention. Lindsay Clancy did everything a mother in her situation could do. She recognized something was wrong. She sought help from professionals. She hospitalized herself 3 times. She told people she had thoughts of harm. The system had the tools, the information, and the opportunities to intervene, and no one did. And now the system blames her because they effed up. The system that failed those 3 children has never been called to answer for it in a criminal courtroom. Lindsay Clancy, paralyzed, confined to a wheelchair, facing life in prison, is the only person sitting at a defendant's table. Maybe that needs to change. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue our conversation right there. Be sure to press subscribe. We will be covering this case from start to finish. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.